You are listening to CEO Perspectives, a podcast by the Conference Board.
Welcome to this episode of CEO Perspectives, a signature webcast and podcast series by the Conference Board. CEO Perspectives are conversations that take an objective, nonpartisan look at a range of timely topics that matter most to business leaders. To help make sense of these topics and how they'll unfold, we'll sit down with experts and do what we do best at the Conference Board, provide trusted insights for what's ahead. I'm Steve Odlin, the CEO of the Conference Board and the host of this series. And as the U.S. and its allies continue to respond to Russia's incursion into Ukraine and the escalating economic sanctions, India is one of the biggest nations that has yet to condemn Russia's actions. And they are throwing in with Russia economically in a variety of ways. In today's conversation, we'll explore India's pivotal role in the conflict. What is India's relationship with Russia? What is India's relationship with China? What will all of this mean for the global economy? Joining me today is Dr. Lori Esposito Murray. Dr. Murray is the president of the Committee for Economic Development, which is the public policy arm of the Conference Board, but she also is an international relations expert and a security expert. Lori, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, Steve, thank you for asking me to join in this very important conversation. Yeah.
So, Lori, let's start with India's historical relationship with Russia and the USSR. Describe how that's played out over the years.
Well, it's a really important question because there's a lot of focus right now on India's relationship with Russia because of the oil trade. There's also a lot of emphasis, needless to say, on India's neutrality. And it's really important to look at and understand the historic relationship with Russia in order to understand what neutrality actually means in this current crisis with Ukraine. And shortly after independence, India embraced neutrality, declaring that its interests were best served by a non-aligned policy. They were breaking free of British rule, imperialism, and a non-aligned policy was how they were defining their role as an independent nation in the world. But as Soviet Chinese relations began to splinter in the 1950s, India started to develop closer economic and security ties with Russia in order to counter the threat from historic rivals of China on one border, and then, of course, Pakistan, its new neighbor on the other border. And India's relationship with Russia, particularly its dependence on Russian military hardware, deepened in the 1970s. This was the period where the U.S. was doing its openings to China. Both Russia and India felt that they were left out of this new arrangement, and they were going to be outsiders as the U.S. was developing under President Nixon a very new approach to the world order by opening to China and also trying to solve the Vietnam crisis. And so India and Russia actually codified their relationship with the signing of a formal peace and friendship treaty in the early 1970s. And that really has been the foundations of India's relationship with the new Russia as well, after the Soviet Union collapsed. It's a strong historical relationship. India's needed it to help balance its relationship with China, its contentious border problems, and it's also needed its friendship in terms of dealing with its arch rival, Pakistan.
Yeah, now, the subject of this is not China, but you can't talk about Russia and India without also mentioning China as the third leg of the stool. Just briefly, India's relationship with China has not been all that friendly over time. So this new triumvirate is a little strange.
It's a little strange, but it also has a very strong economic base. China is second to the United States in terms of its trade relationship with India. Russia is, even though the military trade is extremely important, is far behind in terms of trade relations with India. So that friendship with Russia became really important as the interdependence in terms of the economic relationship with China was growing. And finding commonality strategically was also really important. Both China and Russia were becoming strategically aligned, developing their friendship, so to speak, unlimited friendship because they share strategic goals. And in that strategic approach, India actually fits in. India, you know, in its non-aligned status, agrees with the strategic approach of lessening the importance of the U.S. dollar in international commerce and finance, and consequently also diminishing the international influence of the United States as a global leader.
Yeah, it's interesting that, you know, India calls itself non-aligned, but then they are aligned. I mean, you know, you can't just say you're non-aligned in a global economy and, you know, with global supply chains and now with some of these pacts that have gone on. You've talked about President Putin's trip to visit Mr. Modi in December and some of the agreements there. Maybe you could share, you know, what happened with that visit.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting visit, and the timing of it is really interesting. And just as a backdrop, in terms of the Putin-Modi relationship, Modi is one of only four foreign leaders that has been awarded Russia's top decoration, the Order of St. Andrew. And he was honored with that award by Putin. They have deepened their relationship during Putin's time in power since 2000 and Modi's time in power after that. You know, they have deepened their relationship. And the Modi-Putin relationship is particularly important. But so what's interesting about the December visit is that it was happening after the U.S. very much was broadcasting globally, not only in terms of private meetings with allies and partners, but sharing U.S. intelligence publicly and globally about the threat of Russia invading Ukraine, and that we believe that Russia would be invading Ukraine, and reaching out to our allies and partners since November. And so the December Putin-Modi trip happens under that shadow. And Putin is greeted warmly by Modi, and they end up striking a number of very important deals, both in oil and in terms of contracts on oil and increasing their oil imports in 2022 specifically. But stepping back, it foreshadowed the China meeting with Xi Jinping in February, just before the Olympics. As the Olympics were opening, Modi and Putin signed a 99-point joint statement on partnership for peace, progress, and prosperity. Putin goes to China and does the same thing with China in terms of having a limitless relationship and a very long statement of the coalescing of their strategic goals and their friendship. So you see it happening in India first. And then the agreements included, as I mentioned, agreements in terms of upping to 2 million tons of oil to India by the end of 2022. It included increases in coal imports, as well as steel, shipbuilding, and of course, the military trade issue and the surface-to-air missiles that Russia had been promising India and working on with India since 2016 to sell the S-400s, which is a system of particular concern to the United States. They actually codified that deal and set the actual import of those systems in motion and committed to a 10-year continued military relationship, as well as codifying that they wanted to increase trade from about $8 billion to about $35 billion by 2035. So pretty significant agreements, really locking in that relationship, and very similar to what Putin achieves with Xi Jinping in China a couple of months later.
Yeah, and so this independence is, you know, a little bit of a head scratcher. And India's always been relatively quiet about that, you know, and low key. But this was different. So after the Ukraine invasion, Russia, of course, had the energy embargoes put on by the West. And so they have extra oil and gas. And Mr. Modi raised his hand and very noisily said, "We'll take it at below market rates, ship it here." And you don't tend to see that coming from India, which means that there's a change here. Is that just, you know, that's a little different than than history in India? Is that just, you know, Mr. Modi? Is he, you know, is it to try to tell the world something, or what? How do you read this?
Well, you have to put it in perspective of the historical friendship that they've had. So it's not an aberration from Indian policy towards the Soviet Union and then the new Russia. There is a particular relationship that's really important between Modi and Putin. I think there's a relationship of respect and friendship. And there is a particular dependency, even though India has been trying to diversify its military purchases where the U.S. actually had come in second at one point a year or so ago, and France and Israel were involved, and it's now gone from 65% of Russian military dependency to imports to about 49%. But given that, it's still a very important relationship, and you also have to maintain those systems as well. And they committed, as I said, to 10 years out. So, but what they are doing is, and arguing what they are doing from the Indian foreign minister, is that oil sales are only 1-2% of their imports. There's a bargain out there. They're getting bargain prices. They're getting help with cost of insurance and shipping. And it is in their national interest as a major importer of oil to try and find a bargain for their country, their economy, and their people. That's the argument. The U.S. is asking, because as you know, there are no sanctions on oil and gas, except for what the U.S. has imposed independently on our own imports. There are no sanctions. The U.S. position has been to ask India, to ask Modi directly, and President Biden did this apparently or reportedly in his conversations with Modi, not to accelerate the sale of Russian oil. According to Reuters data, they have actually imported just about as much oil since the invasion of Ukraine as they did in all of 2021. And so there's been a significant acceleration, although at this point, India is arguing that it isn't going above what it has usually imported.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Russia's relationship with other nations tends to be focused on like-minded people, like-minded nations politically. So, you know, you see other communist nations throwing in with Russia, the Venezuelas, the Cubas, China's in this case. India's a little different because it is a democracy with a well-established legal system. It's a nation of shopkeepers, very capitalist. So the idea that India would align itself with this type of, you know, economic system is a bit of a head scratcher. What do you read in that?
Well, it's very significant, as you mentioned, the fact that India is the longest standing democratic nation, which actually I think is equally as concerning as its economic relations with Russia right now during the sanction regime, is that India, as the longest standing democracy, is actually lending a tremendous amount of credibility and really undermining the narrative of the West that this is autocracy versus democracy. When you have the longest standing democracy in the world actually tipping towards Russia. So, you know, that's a really important point. The other thing is that it is important to point out that India is straddling. It is, although it's tipping towards Russia, it is straddling in this neutrality position. And I say that because it continues to be the linchpin of the U.S. strategy in the Indo-Pacific. And so Prime Minister Modi has actually made a strong point, as his foreign minister has, about the importance of democracies, you know, the natural friendship with the U.S. But his trade relationship with the U.S. is absolutely significant. There's $112 billion of trade with India, and this is, you know, which dwarfs the Russian trade at about $8 billion, even if it grows to the $30 billion that they're talking about by 2035. And of course, that's followed by China with $110 billion in trade, which has grown significantly just in 2021. So you have India economically really straddling, needing to have good relations with both Russia, or among Russia, China, and the U.S. And it is straddling its policies, to do that. It's defining its neutrality in the UN as abstaining on these votes, which has really concerned, the U.S. In terms of the signals that it's sending Russia and the pressure that we're trying to put on Russia. But what's interesting is that in the vote on removing Russia from the Human Rights Commission, the UN Human Rights Commission, China actually moved to vote against that. So India and China have been both abstaining. China actually moved to vote against that. And India maintained its position of abstention and actually criticized the brutality that took place in Bucha, although it did not mention Russia by name. It actually called for an investigation and criticized the butchery that actually took place, which is, it's a straddling. And I also think that the humanitarian piece of this may be a turning point for India if the war escalates to Russian use of conventional weapons.
Right, but we haven't seen that so far. We've talked a little bit about India's historical relationship with Russia. Next, we'll talk about this unique geopolitical axis between India, Russia, and China. We'll take a short break and be right back with my conversation with Dr. Lori Esposito-Murray.
As war rages in Ukraine, the Conference Board is closely monitoring the situation and producing timely and relevant content on a daily basis that will help the business community navigate this global geopolitical unrest. What will the impact be on oil prices, food prices, our supply chain, and what about cybersecurity? How will this conflict impact the way your organization does business around the world, and how will you communicate this crisis to customers and employees? We're gathering the very latest content on our website. Just head to conference-board.org and find trusted insights to help you and your team lead with confidence.
Welcome back to CEO Perspectives. I'm your host, Steve Odlin, the CEO of the Conference Board, and I'm joined by Dr. Lori Esposito-Murray, the president of CED, the Public Policy Center of the Conference Board. So, Lori, we have to talk about this new axis. I mean, you've got Russia, China, and India. Now, China and India have had skirmishes on their borders. They've not been very friendly historically. Is this President Putin's doing in order to put three large economies, the dominant economies of Asia together and create a new axis?
And Steve, that is on point, and it's been happening for over a decade in terms of trying to build that access, an access against U.S. leadership, the West. It's included the BRICS, and there are a number of forums where India and China and Russia actually join in terms of strategic approaches to the world. There has been an effort by India and by Russia and China primarily, since the Crimean invasion and annexation, watching what happened with Iran being kicked out of SWIFT, and after the more limited sanctions, but still sanctions that had an important effect on Russia in terms of signaling how Crimea was actually isolated economically, an effort by China and Russia to develop an alternative SWIFT system, as I said, watching what happened with Iran. And that's been in the works for over a decade. And, the strategic approach is to limit the impact and effect and primacy of the U.S. dollar. The BRICS, India as part of the BRICS has been a part of that effort. And Foreign Minister Lavrov has actually accelerated that effort in his visit in April to move India into the nascent but still growing SWIFT system that Russia has used and is using more since, obviously, it's been kicked out of SWIFT with the invasion of Ukraine. And trying to move or announcing that they were moving the payment systems for India and Russian trade into that system. China and Russia are talking about combining their systems. And so although it's nascent, foundations are there, and you see the groundwork for an alternative SWIFT financial system that will really fracture international commerce. You've also seen, I just want to add that, you've also seen this switch from dollar, using the dollar in international trade by Russia, and also in terms of Russia and India, and switching to a ruble-rupee exchange system. And what's really fascinating is that in 2013, 95% of Russia's export to the BRIC countries was in U.S. dollars. But between 2014 and 2019, it's gone down significantly to very, very low numbers. And what's important here is that since Modi has been prime minister, the rupee-ruble exchanges surged five times during Prime Minister Modi's tenure, increasing from about 6% of total bilateral trade to 30%. And when Lavrov was just in India, as I mentioned on April 1st, and he was the only foreign minister to meet with Prime Minister Modi directly, Wang Yi was not from China. China's foreign minister was not granted that visit. Lavrov was. And Lavrov very publicly said, we're moving to a SWIFT system, or we're moving to a ruble-ruby exchange system, or using those systems more in order to continue trade during these sanctions regimes.
And right. So, and the reason you're focusing on SWIFT is that's the language, the interbank language that's used internationally, which facilitates commerce. And so by excluding countries, you then really limit their ability to do commerce. What you're saying is that China, India, and Russia have created their own alternate system, which facilitates, you know, their ability to interact with each other, to trade and to pay each other, essentially, which is pretty important.
Yeah.
The other thing that you're talk about the BRICS, which is Brazil, Russia, India, and China. People are now dropping the B and they're just saying the RICS. And that's part and parcel of this new axis as well.
Yeah. And I also just want to clarify that both Russia and China have been developing alternative SWIFT systems and working together to see if they can combine them. And they're trying to bring India into that.
But, you know, if you think about this whole global supply chain, Western companies have a lot of IT development, a lot of IT support, a lot of, you know, systems run out of India. So that's part of that big number of trade that you talked about. We also are dependent on China throughout the globe as a manufacturing site. We also are dependent on both for minerals and, you know, other sources related to semiconductors. And then you have Taiwan out there, and that's not the subject of today, but Taiwan produces most of the world's semiconductors. So if you start thinking about these countries now creating their own axis that then begins to exclude the rest of the world, it puts Western-based companies in a very precarious position, doesn't it?
Right. And it's foreshadowing. The big question is, how does this end? Where are we going? How is the world going to be different? It's really important to recognize that no matter what happens on the battlefield, unless there is agreed upon, negotiated agreement that the U.S. and our allies and partners agree with Russia and on a peaceful settlement in Ukraine, which seems close to nil at this point in terms of being an off-ramp. What are you looking at? The sanctions will stay on. And if you're looking at these really severe sanctions, you know, the economic battle will continue if Russia, particularly if Russia is successful militarily, the economic war, you know, battlefield will continue. These sanctions will stay on. And so what we are going to have a fractured financial system. You know, Russia is out of the SWIFT messaging transactions in terms of financial transactions globally. And so you're going to have a fractured system. You're seeing, you know, watching how Russia is trying to enhance this nascent SWIFT system that it has, combine it with China, get India into that system. You're seeing how this fracture is, you're foreshadowing how this fractured economic system, what it's going to look like. going forward. And what, as you said, Western companies, Western governments, how are dealing with supply chains, dealing with payments, and are you really looking at two very different, one world, two systems, financial systems?
You know, you can't talk about India without also mentioning Pakistan, which has been this conflict that's been going on since Pakistan was separated from India. There still are skirmishes on the border. You've got two diametrically opposed nations, nuclear nations. And, you know, the U.S. has thrown in a little bit with Pakistan. They've been selling them arms and so forth. And is part of this whole tension between India and Pakistan and the U.S.'s involvement in that driving India more towards Russia? Is there, you know, how does that whole conflict play in?
You know, I will turn to that in just one second, because that is so central. But I do want to mention one other, you know, in terms of India straddling. India just did sign a bilateral trade agreement with Australia. And it shows you the bind that India is in. You know, this bilateral trade agreement is really significant for Indian trade and for its relationship with Australia. And so I just wanted to mention that while you're watching it lean one way, it's also so enmeshed in the economies of the democracies in the region and globally, including the U.S., of course. But turning to Pakistan, that relationship is so central to India's definition of its security. It's the biggest threat it faces. I mean, it faces threats and two major threats. One is China on its border and China as a nuclear power. And it, of course, it faces this longstanding, since its birth as a nation and Pakistan's birth as a nation, really intense animosity that has at times even led to the potential of nuclear conflict. And so that relationship is actually central. China is one of, if not the most important ally that Pakistan has. And so you see the relationship playing out that way. That makes Russia very important to India. The U.S. Had closer relationships with Pakistan than it did with India. And that's in part because of India's decision since the early 70s to actually pursue nuclear weapons and stay out of the non-proliferation regime. And that was a very contentious issue between India and the United States. And so you see the Pakistan security threat, which is, you know, first and foremost, I believe, for India, playing into its relationships with China and also its need for a close relationship with Russia.
So, you know, just to try to put a bow on all of this, if it seems to me that what you're saying is that there's a complete realignment in geopolitical relations going on, and that regardless of which way the kinetic war in Ukraine happens and whether, you know, where Russia takes that, there will be an ongoing economic Cold War, a new economic Cold War. And the question is, who will be part of which piece of that? And so you see strange bedfellows here aligning in a number of different ways. What is the best case in all of this, let's just say, for the United States, and what's the worst case?
So the best case for this is in terms of how this conflict, this war in Ukraine resolves itself. Is clearly if India actually embraces the sanctions regime. I mean, that would be the best case. You have two major powers. I think the best you can hope from China is that it really does stay neutral. I'm not convinced you're going to see that, in part because what we're looking at is holding to where the U.S. policy is recognizing that agreements and contracts exist with Russia. And we're hoping in terms of neutrality that both China and India do not step in and provide a lifeline to Putin and Russia. What's interesting about that is, as opposed to the Crimea conflict, when Russia annexed Crimea, Putin actually signed many new agreements right before the invasion. And so sticking to the contracts they already have were actually contracts that Russia sealed to increase trade and increase relations and codify strategic relationships prior to the invasion, in as part of their plan to prepare for a sanctions world that was about to come down, which we were also making really clear prior to the invasion, what the sanctions might include. So best case, India actually embraces the sanctions regime, China stays neutral. Worst case is that you see a fractured one world, two systems, where India and China and Russia actually coalesce to form an alternative financial system. You'll still see, I think you have to see straddling in terms of both China and India, given their economic entrenchment into the European and global economies. But you'll see a retrenchment, I think, in terms of supply chains. China has already announced how it wants to become much more self-reliant. India has announced how it wants to become much more self-reliant. You're going to see a contraction in terms of what this global system looks like and a fracture of it.
Yeah, so nationalism, you know, could prevail here, but it does suggest that the Western companies, conference board members, should be thinking about the worst case here, in which case they really would need to find alternatives for their supply chains that are dependent on India, Russia, and China. And that's what I hear you saying in the worst case.
And, you know, that has already started, Steve, as you know, in terms of, in part because of the spotlight that COVID has shown on the dependencies of single supply chains, coming out of a single country, particularly China, that you can't get access in terms of vaccines, production, and medicines. So that's already started because of COVID. And it's really interesting because CED has actually recommended that it's not just onshoring, is actually looking for more reliable allies. And the IMF just came out with their recommendations in terms of supply chains. And Secretary Treasury Yellen has called it friendshoring, that you need to have more reliable sources for your supply chains and to look towards. You can't just look internally because you're not necessarily really protecting yourself. I mean, look what happened at Texas in terms of the climate attack on its ability to provide energy. So you can't just look internally, but you need to be looking for relations with closer allies and partners.
Wow, Lori, it's always great to talk to you. Your insights are amazing and incredibly useful. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Steve. Thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for what you are doing to make sure that these important conversations and insights are discussed and are available to particularly the business community.
Yeah, and thanks to all of our listeners for checking in with CEO Perspectives. Every week, we'll be joined by prominent thought leaders to discuss insights on the issues of our time. We'll cover leading topics in economics, public policy, geopolitics, ESG, human capital, and more. Please share CEO Perspectives with your colleagues, your friends, your family. I know they'll want to listen. I'm Steve Odlin, and this podcast has been brought to you by The Conference Board.
You've been listening to a podcast from The Conference Board, your source of trusted insights for what's ahead. For the latest insights to help guide your business through this time of geopolitical unrest, we have daily and relevant updates on our website at conference-board.org.